Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 77, being recorded on the 13th of May, 2015. Azure by the numbers. I'm Sujit DeMello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter and Evan Basilek. And Kale, you're back from Ignite in Chicago. How are things over there?
Cold.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, it was colder, but no, everything was good. There was a lot of cool things announced, like we talked about last time, and a lot of new things. Even today, there was something. Not to jump ahead, but there was something that literally just came out today that was kind of big, because I was talking about Power BI a little bit last time. So one of the things was, if you're using that new portal, our Power BI preview, you can only talk to like analysis services and Excel spreadsheets and those kind of things for data sources before, but the one that was missing that I liked was like just an Azure SQL database. But you couldn't do that. It wasn't directly there. And so now, actually today, there's a blog post. I just dropped it in the link dump. We can put it in the show notes, but it's actually available right now. It just happened today, so it's kind of okay. Cool.
Well, I'm really surprised that wasn't in there at launch. I wonder if it's some of the retry logic that was required for that, those libraries for that to work. Because, I mean, like, that's one, those are both out of the same team.
Yeah, I talked to the guys there at the show, and that was fielding the BI booth, and they were saying that they built this connector for Analytics Server, and they spent quite a bit of resources, you know, making sure that thing was solid. And I think that's where a lot of the time was devoted. But he had mentioned that they were looking to do the native SQL one. I need to play with it a little bit to see if it works with all the scheduling and all that kind of thing. So to see, like, if we change data in the database, is there any kind of polling that we can do to automatically refresh the dashboard? But it's exciting. Looks cool.
Yeah. No, it's really kind of cool to see some of these, hybrid type connectivity. You know, I mean, the cloud stuff is great, and it's nice to see SQL Azure, because I have a soft spot in my heart for SQL Azure. Azure SQL Database in there. But, the hybrid stuff is just amazing that we can do that. That really opens up a lot of opportunities, you know, with the Power BI stuff. So
obviously the first, I think when anybody talks about Azure, I think the first thing you think about is just scale, right? That's one of the main reasons why someone would think about going to the cloud, because you have this almost infinite scale out and scale up available to you. I mean, it does cost money, but it's available almost at the tip of your fingers, and you can just get as much capacity as you need. And Evan had a good idea. He said, let's just try and pull out some interesting numbers and statistics that we currently have. And these are all public information, but he put it all together into one list, and we were going to just talk about some of those numbers just to give you guys an idea as to how huge and large Azure is. I mean, these numbers, even for someone like me that deals with Azure somewhat on a regular basis, they blew my mind. So I'm sure you're going to be pretty amazed and impressed by some of the stuff we're going to talk about on this episode. Just a couple of things which I cleared up with the guys just before we got on. There are some numbers that are not public, and we can't discuss. We're not privy to those numbers. Things like, the number of servers out there, or how many gateways that we may have. That's kind of confidential information, and so that information we won't be discussing. But we will be talking about some of the other. Just the sheer capacity of the system, so that you get an idea as to how large Azure actually is. So where do we want to dive in, guys? Let's see. You've got... go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the ones, so, I was on the identity team for a while, and I wish I could remember what this number was, when I was on that team about a year ago, But one of the things that kind of blew my mind is the number of authentications per day to Azure Active Directory. And the number these days is exceeding 1 billion authentications per day.
Wow.
Right. I mean, you always hear, the number of tenants, right, that are out there. And you know, there's, almost 5 million tenants out there. But everybody gets a tenant if you create, an Azure account these days, right? So I've never really kind of viewed that number as super representative of the actual use. But if there's an authentication, that implies somebody actually leveraged that authentication to access some resource somewhere.
Correct.
Right? So that billion, I mean, that's just amazing that something's at that scale. And this thing's still pretty new.
Yeah. Just getting started here. Now, I know the number that you had noted was 13 billion per week. So it's probably more than a billion a day, right? If you just go by...
And this may be some of these numbers are, I think, from different different time windows, right? So the one is from March, and then this other, the other source of data is, I'm not exactly sure when it's done, but I know we go up every week, we increase,
mm-hmm.
right? So the March number was 1 billion, but yeah, you're right. If you look at the most recent stuff that's published, you know, now we're saying 13 billion per week, so that's going to be almost 2 billion a day.
Yeah, that's right? quite a jump.
Yeah, exactly. So, the stuff's clearly getting used. It's not like this is vaporware, right? I mean, this is actual usage.
And I suppose these are authentications for all sorts of services, right? Almost every service is authenticated in some way or another. Even if you publish a public blob, for example. That still has, is that authenticated too? Does that have a public authentication or something of that nature?
Yeah, not. Yeah, I was going to say, for the blobs, typically those don't have, I don't believe those have Azure authentication options. Those are always the SaaS URLs.
Right, we have the signature. The special key, yeah.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't think those count, but.
Yeah, the O365, though, counts in there, right? So that's a pretty big chunk.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I know, I'm starting to see more and more things on my side that, things I just use internally, that they're clearly leveraging Azure AD, right? Because I'm not hitting an ADFS server necessarily, right? I'm seeing the auth go out and it's hitting Azure AD at that point. I mean, the same sign-on was a huge right. thing there, right? Because then you don't have to have ADFS to be able to use creds in that fashion. And so, I mean, what about you guys? What any particular number kind of catch your attention?
Well, since you talked about Azure AD and you gave the number of authentications, another number that popped up over here is that close to 5 million organizations are using Azure AD, which is just mind-blowing number. I mean, it's 5 million organizations that actually have all their user information in Azure AD, right? Is that what it means?
Yeah, I suspect that one's probably tenants. Mm-hmm. I was saying, that's the tenants that exist.
Right.
I think the thing that kind of struck me was that, what did they say? We said a big chunk of those had more than 500 or more employees.
Yeah.
Right. They're probably using authentication at some aspect via DirSync or whatnot.
Right. Right.
Right. We don't quite. Let's see. I don't think we break that one down quite as much.
I think we mentioned that a majority of them are small businesses, which is very good to
less
know.
Less than 500,
right?
Yeah.
Less than 500 employees. So that just, I think we've talked about that in the show, how, for small and medium-sized businesses, Azure makes so much sense. And it's great to see that that's being realized.
Yeah, the I don't know if you guys, Kale, you might have caught this session at Ignite. I'm still angry at you for you getting to go. Mm-hmm. But there was...
I was working,
working, right? Yeah. It was mentioned in two different sessions that I listened, was that there was a survey, and I can't remember who did the survey, but it was a reputable place, that something like 16% of all companies surveyed have no on-premises resources. And Azure AD is one of the ways that you can do that, because that's why everybody has DCs on premises, right?
Right.
That allows you to have nothing on premises.
That's correct.
Right, using either Azure AD or an Azure VM to do it.
So you said 16.16% off.
Yeah, they were saying 16%, and then they were saying that I think the prediction was it'd be 20%. 20% of the people were planning to have none.
Yeah, I think when you see like Intune grow a little bit, so you can do the device management a little bit more. So like, almost like you can start to do the group policy stuff without having on-premise DC. I mean, that I'd see that number growing then, because then you don't, even for the guys who are holding on to these strict policies and stuff that they have in Azure, you know, DCs, if you can get that in Intune and you sign into the cloud, I mean, that would be cool.
Yeah, that's the main limitation right now, correct? You can't have computer objects in Azure AD.
Excellent. I think the one thing, too, with the auth that sticks out to me, though, that's a little bit surprising is towards the end of some of the bullets we had there was about using third-party federation servers. I do see a lot of customers because they've already established those things. So like SiteMinder, that's a big one that's like popular. I see you noted there. I'm just surprised that number's so low. I think we said there's like 1% are using these third-party federation servers. I'd have thought that number would have been a little higher, but that's surprising.
Yeah, I think I do think some of that, if memory serves me right, from when I was doing that support for a while, some of that was because we didn't do a great job supporting those other ones for a while. But because they're certainly big, they've got big markets. Right, mm-hmm. Especially like Okta and stuff and Ping, right? But I think a lot of that is driven by Azure AD is we just make it so simple to get and have and use, right? So you have to be pretty devoted to something else to kind of stay there when it's really easy.
Yeah, that's the question that always comes down because you get these things ingrained, these third parties, and then it's like, that's great, they do the job and they do a really good job at it, but then it's like, What are they providing above and beyond what we provided with Azure AD or ADFS and then you just have to start questioning because the integration is really good with that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely.
And then the other number that comes up in that area is that 32% are authentications completed by an ADFS server deployed at a customer site, and that would mean that they're doing some sort of they've set up a proxy on their site, right? And they've got on-premise applications that they're using. Is that why they would use ADFS?
Yeah, if you want to, if you don't want to use synced credentials or synced identities, right? You have to use ADFS at that point if you're federated that way. The thing that I wonder is when we say deployed at a customer site, how much of those are really on premises? Right. How many of those are in Azure? Because I don't know anybody that runs ADFS for the sake of ADFS. Right. There are certainly ADFS has some really cool capabilities, but most people use it because they want to do O365. Right. And very few of them actually want to have ADFS servers on premises.
Right.
But I think a big chunk of them are using the ADFS stuff.
Yeah, I think the thing before we had that way to sync passwords, kind of, where we could only sync user identities, it was kind of a bad story because, like, not a bad story, but it was tough for small companies.
It was painful. It's okay. You can say,
No, but, like, small companies, they got maybe 100 employees, and now you got to tell them they got to run this farm over here of Federation servers, or they have to kind of manually sync their passwords kind of thing. And now, once that other piece, once that piece was added with password sync, it was like, wow, that opens up the door for those. And from my side, like we're working with the enterprise customers, most of them, the ones that guys that want to run those ADFS farms, is because of policies. Like we want all of our federation, we want all of our things here. We put a minimal amount of user data up there in Azure AD. But that's usually what I end up seeing those guys do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So definitely the big number that caught my eye was the number of storage objects that we have.
Oh, yeah.
I think nobody can beat that one. There's 30 trillion storage objects right now.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and track down. I saw somewhere the amount of storage we can support in Azure, which I'm sure is going up and up. I mean, it's this massive amount. So I wonder what the actual storage, what the 30 trillion storage objects turns into. But just just that number. I mean, how many often do you see a trillion number associated with anything other than like a federal debt or something? I mean, you know, I mean,
that's just a phenomenal number. I mean, again, you know, Azure is still growing. Right? We're nowhere near where we would our peak or where we, you know, where we're at capacity or something. We can still handle a lot more than that. I mean, I can easily see us going to 100 trillion and not having a problem.
I wouldn't surprise me if that number is up a couple trillion even since this was written. Right. I think, you know, just on a personal side from that, I mean, do you guys even, like, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I assume you're geeky enough that you always did this as well, but I've always had a server at home to store stuff, right, for, you know, pictures and all that kind of stuff. I don't have that anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I have them in OneDrive. Now I'm still trying to figure out the best way to share the pictures of my immediate family, right, because I used to just put them on a share that everybody in the house could see. But even that didn't work great. But now I just, you know, give them OneDrive links. But, like, why would you store stuff on premises these days?
It makes no sense, yeah, because I was constantly backing up my server, had a backup of the backup, and good goodness.
Yeah, because that's a good way to be unmarried really fast.
Yeah, spend the whole weekend going through backups. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Cale, what do you like? Which number did jump out at you?
Yeah, the storage. So it's funny today. I was just talking to another Microsoft employee about some stuff here. We were out eating dinner, and we were talking about the storage thing a little bit. Not about this number specifically, but about the scale and that kind of thing. And it was like, you know, it's funny, like, to me, like, it was, and I'm sure it's weighs on these guys as well who are managing this platform, but, like, when things start to get to those numbers, it's like when you make a change to that system, you better make sure that you got all your T's crossed because, like, there's so much there and the impact is so high. Like, so it speaks to the maturity of, you know, our SDM and our ALM processes internal, you know, to be able to even do that. I mean, you get something that large and then you want to change a schema or something. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's got to get through some crazy analysis to make sure that we don't break anything.
Yeah. That whole breaking change thing does become a much bigger problem in the cloud space, right, than the on-premises world. Cause I guess if you think about it, in the on-prem world, you can always choose as a, you know, whoever's running the software, like, I'm not going to install that version patch, you know, whatever, right? Or I'm going to roll it back. In cloud, like, everybody's running the same code.
Well, I mean, that's not entirely correct, right? I mean, the versions are used very frequently in the cloud, especially when you're talking about services. Everything's a REST service these days, right? Or a web API service. And it's very, you know, it's very common to have different service versions. So you can't, I'm pretty sure they're doing it. Like, you know, every time we have this new SDK, for example, the new Azure SDK, that typically is targeting some new version or some variant of the backend service to
something new.
You see what I'm saying? So they can release new functionality that way. And of course, just making sure that none of the new users are affected before backfilling everybody else.
Right. Yeah. No. Completely agreed to D. Right. But there is certainly a class of developers, customers, whatever you want to call them in this context, that just say, I'm always going to use vCurrent.
Correct.
Right. For that. So there, I think there's a much higher bar because if there really is a breaking change, right, you do that back compat.
Correct.
You know, so they have the version and all that. But not every customer sets the API as part of their call.
Right,
because there's the, I forget what you call it when you just don't, I guess the unversioned.
The header or whatever, right? The version header.
Yeah, there's an extra revision version, yeah.
Yeah, and lots of people write code to do that just so they are using it, and I think people developing on it, right? You certainly have knobs and things you can do, but at the same time, like, man, if you mess something up, it is for a lot of people. You know, absolutely.
So then,
Yeah,
I was going to say, being a developer at heart, and as part of my day jobs as well, not just my heart, but the number of developers registered with Visual Studio Online, that was pretty impressive. 1.65 million developers using Visual Studio Online. That's not a small number for developers. That's phenomenal. And that, you know, that gives them all the, you know, the source control, the work item tracking. I think you can get build management, right? You can do your builds in the cloud. I think there's even an option to do testing, automated testing and deployment and things like that. So really a full SDLC service available out there, and I'm glad, you know, people are, developers are using it. That's really great to see that.
Yeah, I've got one that I use for my personal stuff.
There you go.
Right, you know, I mean, I assume you guys do as well.
Yep, everything's up there. I don't have to worry about losing it anymore.
I don't know about you. My problem was never losing it. It was always making a change. I couldn't figure out how to
Well, now
You
you
know?
can. Now this,
Yeah.
and I guess, you know, the versions go back all the way to zero now. Just
Yeah.
keep putting the new one out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the one here, the number that's sticks out too, that I think is you'll see gonna grow pretty quickly. Just from where I sit, what I see from people is the amount of SQL databases in Azure. I think
Yeah.
right now I saw something like over 1 million, but you know that was a pretty, in my opinion, that was a pretty limited feature set. I mean, it did the core relational database, but like transparent data encryption and some of the performance things that we have now. I mean, it's really becoming the bar that, I mean, it's becoming as close to on-prem, you know, performance that we can get. I think it's amazing. I think that thing's going to grow fast, but that's
Yeah,
my
I think you're
opinion.
right with the new, what do we call it, V12, I think is the name.
Yeah, V12.
Support. Yeah, with the higher SQL compat, yeah, I would agree with you. I suspect that one's going to grow pretty quickly.
Evan, what do you like? What else do you like over here?
You know, I mean, I agree with Kale, the database one's pretty impressive, but I think the one that is for job security, right, that kind of jumped out at me was the 57% of Fortune 500 companies are using Azure. Right. I mean that. So having been in Azure as long as I have now, where it used to be, I never like what we have. We call them premier customers, right? Our biggest and customers that pay, you know, for really expensive support contracts and the like. You know, when I first started in Azure, there was none of those there. Right. We never talked to them. I went. We have these the account type called technical account manager, right? Or TAMs. They're the ones that own the relationship with these customers. I didn't talk to TAMs ever. Right, for years. And then now I'm talking to them regularly, right?
That's
Which kind of
cool.
made me feel like we were making some traction here, but I didn't realize it was over half.
That is very, very impressive. Yep.
Yeah, and companies like that are not, they're generally not the first movers,
Correct.
right, to technology like this. That really does say to the maturity thing that I think, Gail, you were talking about earlier.
And I can
Yeah,
clearly
the
tell
only
you the remaining 43% over here that is not on Azure. Most of them are financial services companies because that's the one industry that is holding out on the cloud right now.
Is that compliance reasons, Sujeet? I mean, you know that industry really well, but is that compliance
It's
stuff, or is it just that?
primarily yeah, compliance, the fact that, you know, there's no guarantee that their data is not next to somebody else's data and what could happen. It's just a fear of the unknown in the most
Okay.
for the most part.
Okay. So those are generally very conservative companies then from that aspect.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm
Yeah.
sure they'll come around eventually. It's just they'll be the last to move to the cloud.
Yeah.
Eventually the pressure is going to get so high, right? Because everyone's going to say, "Wait a minute, you guys are spending all this money on your own IT. We're becoming elephants soon, you know. You got to be a little more nimble and move to the cloud."
Yeah, that was the other comment that struck me at the at Ignite, one of the Ignite ones I was listening to is, you know, the companies that don't move to the cloud for compliance or security, whatever reasons, are going to be the most secure, most compliant companies that are out of business at
There you
some
go.
point because all their competitors
That
will have done it, right?
is That's well put.
Yeah, I and that's not my line. I think it might have been Marcinovich that said it at Ignite, but I thought that line kind of really struck home with me.
I tell you, the one number here too that's in our little stat thing here that I can't even get my head around. I just don't understand how this is possible, but 90,000 new customer subscriptions a month.
Wow.
That's just a number, man. That's like, how's it possible? I can't even wrap my head around having 100,000 customers, and we do that a month, you know, almost.
That's just amazing. Yeah, just imagine. I mean, you know, I Well, you gotta say they have kept up with the speed of creating these accounts because recently, I think as part of my customer side, they gave us Azure accounts for everybody, so we were all setting them up, and it got set up in I think in 3 or 4 minutes. The whole process was done. We had our Azure account all set up, and we were ready to spin up VMs and whatnot. They've done a great job in keeping up, even though there's so many. The volume's pretty high of new accounts coming in. They're able to keep that whole process. It was fairly painless. There was just a couple of things you had to do, and it went ahead and did its things and came back and said, okay, everything's done. It's a very asynchronous process, right? You don't kept hanging over there. They keep you can do other things, and it keeps keeping you up to date, saying, okay, now we're almost done. And it was a great, it really was a great story, very great process there.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that. We took some lessons from like Xbox, right, or Xbox Live on that, on how to do that stuff and do it reasonably efficiently, right? Because I suspect they probably get more signups a month, maybe, but than Azure. But you're right. I mean, Azure's kind of a more complicated concept, right? You have,
There's a couple more steps involved there.
There's a reason they're GUIDs, right?
I think one of the other things too was, and I don't know if we have a particular stat around this, but the acceleration of new services, and new offerings and new products in Azure is, accelerated to the point where, knowing Azure is probably not even possible anymore. To say that you know everything in Azure would be a huge statement. I mean, I don't think that's possible because everything is constantly changing, but it's also like more things are coming. Like we've talked about the app model, the app service stuff that just came out. I mean, it's just every day there's another thing that's coming around the corner that's in preview, and a couple months later it's out there. And it's, I mean, everybody's used to hearing this now, but it's just trying to get your head around it is amazing. I mean,
Very soon the number of services themselves will be in the thousands.
I don't know how you guys in the field, right? I mean, I kind of get forced to because customers call and say, "Hey, I'm using fill in the blank and it didn't work right." But I don't know how you guys in the field even come close to keeping up with it, right? Because I manage to keep up with my little area of the
Well,
Azure world.
let me tell you, in the field, I mean, I focus on app dev, right? But when I get asked questions, I get asked questions ranging from, oh, my Xbox doesn't work, to this Windows Phone problem, to my Windows 7 PC, to my server, to you name it. They expect me to know every Microsoft product in and out and expect an immediate answer all the time. That's basically what happens.
But I mean,
See,
even in the Azure space, it's like, when you talk to a customer, they'll say, "Well, we think that we're looking at this," and then when you start talking to them, they don't discriminate between or know the difference even between the different things we have, like IaaS and PaaS and these things. They'll just say, "Here's what I want to do," and then it'll just be like, "I think I need IaaS," and you're like, "Wait a second," but so you really have to have your head around like what are the deficiencies, like where is the best place to put the right workload, and that's hard,
And I kind of think to some extent, Cale, right, I mean, I don't know that it changes dramatically on a daily basis, but I think it certainly changes pretty frequently as new features get released and new, like, this whole Azure SQL database, right? Going from, what we were on to V12 is significantly changes that conversation, I would think.
Yeah, a conversation you had 6 months ago now is slightly different. It's like, wait, we don't have to do that anymore. We can do it this way. But
When working with my customer, one of the things they always try to ask me to do is how can they increase the performance, right? They measure the number of requests that they get into the system, and typically those could be maybe 100, 200 per second, right? At peak. I'm looking at this number over here, and Azure takes in 3 million requests per second. That's a phenomenal number. Three million requests in every second. I mean, just the amount of processing that has to happen for one request, I can imagine it. For 3 million requests, I cannot imagine it.
No, agreed. Actually, and I need to pull this up now. I just realized I was just kind of comparing a couple, because a couple of the links that I pulled are older or newer, right? One of these is from April of 2015, and then the other one is from July of 2014. So in July of 2014, this goes back to the Visual Studio Online piece, we were 1.65 million developers on Visual Studio Online. So in less than a year, that number became 3 million.
Wow.
So we almost doubled in less than a year. I think that, in some ways, to me, is more impressive than the 1.65 million because you really get a sense of what that curve looks like.
Exactly.
Right? That's a pretty steep curve there.
And as the number of services are increasing, we're getting more and more developers. It's going to be an exponential curve.
Yeah. No, that was what we used to talk about when I first started in this space. It was, hey, at some point we're going to hit the hockey stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really feels like we're in that space now. It used to be this thing in the future, but I think it really is here now.
And then another number, it wasn't on the list here, but I looked it up on that link that you put in there, and we'll put it in the show notes. There's a nice little dashboard that gives you some high-level statistics about Azure on the Microsoft mm-hmm. website. And one of them was the number of, the percentage of Linux VMs that we have. It's 20%, which is much higher than I expected. I mean, I know that we've been very open to the Linux community, but I didn't expect 20% of our workload to be on Linux. So that's good to see that it's being leveraged, the platform's being leveraged for by even our non-Windows brethren.
Yeah, no, that's amazing to see that. I mean, that really says that we're starting to kind of change our tune, right? We didn't want to talk about Linux previously, right? And now it's 20%. It's pretty cool.
Now, the one number that I kind of didn't see here, right? And I guess this is probably one of those things where, you know, they haven't revealed all information, right? Some is kind of confidential and proprietary, but I'm just curious about we know we have VMs and then we have the PaaS and kind of what the mix is, right? I'm always curious as to, I'm hoping that the flow is that over time people will realize that IaaS is not as good as PaaS and they'll be migrating to PaaS. But I wish we could see some numbers or statistics to that effect to show us this is the balance of IaaS and PaaS today, and this is what it was last year, and that kind of gives us an idea as to that people are moving in that direction where they're moving towards a PaaS model.
Yeah, if anything, I think people are how am I say moving away from PaaS, because I don't think I think the folks that like that know PaaS and understand PaaS are, you know, really all about PaaS, but I know just purely anecdotal, right? PaaS, the volume of stuff we see in PaaS, in the PaaS space I was in, is nothing like the volume we see in the IaaS space.
And you're talking from a support perspective, that's the volume.
Yeah. And some of that obviously is the services overall is growing, but that goes back to like the Premier conversation, right? I mean, Premier customers, they don't write as much new stuff as they do move existing, right? And that's all IaaS. Right, I mean, it's so much easier for, I think, people to get their head wrapped around.
Yeah.
And I think everybody gets the CapEx versus OpEx conversation, so it's just, a much, much easier conversation. I mean, Caleb, I mean, you probably see this the most in your world, right? You know, where somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to do X, and probably, like you were saying, their first thing is, I want to do it as IaaS.
But, yep, almost always, that's the first step, yeah.
What percentage of those do you think, at the end of the day, end up being IaaS? I mean, just off the top of your head, I mean, is it 25% of those actually end up being IaaS? Is it a bigger number?
No, I think it's bigger than that. It's much higher. It's because they understand IaaS. They understand, because virtualization's been around for a long, long time, even before we were doing these public clouds, right? So VMware and all the different, you know, we have Hyper-V, but they're comfortable with that. They understand how that works. But PaaS, they don't understand as much usually because these things are like brand new. Now the guys, you know, the Silicon Valley and the startups and all these guys, they get it, right? They get to PaaS stuff because they know how to work directly with the app and they're very agile. But the IaaS stuff is almost always with large customers because they understand it, you know. And then when you start educating them, like, here's what we could move over to PaaS, like here's what you'd have to change. Then they start to like it, you know, they start to realize it and they'll say that's, you know, kind of day two, but that's almost always how it works.
That's when they bring you back a second time, right?
Yeah, no, it's But sometimes it's a greenfield, you know, especially greenfield apps, like new stuff. Like we have this app that's 20 years old, and, you know, we're looking at the public cloud. And so in this case, maybe they're saying, we have the, you know, the money set aside to go ahead and modernize this or make this thing new. And in that case, sometimes they are, and most of the time they are open to PaaS right away, because then they're like, tell us what your premier offering here, like what's going to make me make this app work the best. And then we do a bake-off. It's not like, I don't even see them as like one better than the other one. It's just,
they're different workloads. What was that? You do a bake-off?
Yeah, we'll do a bake-off and say, okay, what does the app do? Yeah. What does the app do? What are the requirements of the app? Scale, all these different things. Like, look at all the different metrics that would drive a decision versus PaaS versus IaaS kind of thing. And then, yeah, that's the bake-off, you know, and say, okay, what makes sense?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So what I wanted to say about that discussion was that I see that going forward, though, I think we're going to see a shift into the PaaS space. More specifically, we're going to see a shift into the whole container model and the microservice model, the nano server, which is coming up soon. I think, I mean, even in my customer, which is the enterprise financial services customer, definitely they are all over this new stuff, right? And they see the value in it. And where do you guys see it? Is that considered PaaS or IaaS? I always think of that as PaaS, but I may be wrong there.
I think the being portable, being able to be like portable with the solution, and when I say portable, I mean like, okay, so if we have this thing that we're going to build on PaaS, PaaS changes all the time, potentially. You know, the platform could change and the way we do these things could change. But if it's something where it could be kind of wrapped and they could say, I can run this on-prem, which kind of drives to some of the announcements we had around the Azure Stack stuff that's coming. Being able to say, I can run that same workload on-prem or in the cloud and there's very little change, you know, and it's a PaaS type application or even cross-cloud vendor, you know, like that becomes even more difficult with PaaS. But when we can get to that point, I think people will be much more open to PaaS because you're kind of, I don't want to say you're locked into a vendor, but you're kind of locked into a little bit of some of the feature sets, especially if you want to take advantage of like all the feature. You know?
Sure.
Isn't that where Docker and stuff's coming in though, right? Is because that really is a portable container.
Yeah.
Like I'm not up to date on Docker by any stretch, so that's just me kind of outside looking.
Right. And that's the point like. I was trying to make that, people are going to be looking at Docker. And the question is a container considered a PaaS or an IaaS? It's actually a kind of a hybrid thing because it's a mini VM, right? You can think of it that way. But it's still a very constrained environment. So it's a little bit of IaaS and a little bit of PaaS.
It's a CAS. It's containers and service. There you go.
There we go. You heard it here first.
That's our spreading, Kale. We can, you know, we owe you money for that.
Yeah. Royalties.
Nice.
That's funny.
Yeah. That's funny. Okay.
Yeah, no, overall, these just, it'd be really interesting to come back to this. We should make a note to ourselves to come back in 6 months, right? To this podcast.
Look at these
numbers. Look at some of the numbers.
Yep.
Yeah. Pull the recent numbers and just kind of see that curve.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, great. I think that's a wrap then. We'll put links to some of the stuff we talked about in the show notes. And, I think most of the information is public, right, Evan? We can just.
I sure hope so.
We can. I mean,
that's just private. Somebody's in trouble.
The stuff that we haven't talked about that's still in the notes. Can we put all of that on the website?
Yeah, no, I think everything that I put in the show notes is all public stuff.
Okay.
They're all off of other, you know, either, you know, marketing sites for us or out of articles or stuff. So yeah.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is all public stuff. So
well, then we'll put that in the show notes then. Great.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. That was an excellent show. And we were going to have another speaker on today, but he had a bad throat. So we're going to get him next week. So hopefully we'll talk to Stuart next week.
Sounds good.
All right, guys.
Okay. See you, folks.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you. and see you next time.